This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A deadly apartment fire in Greensboro earlier this year is highlighting deep-seated community issues like the lack of affordable housing and the challenges facing the Triad's refugee community. The fire at the Summit Cone apartment complex killed five young children, all siblings, and refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo. David Ford covered that fire and dug deeper into the story for his series. It's called Unsafe Haven. David is a reporter and producer for public radio station WFDD. David, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Tell us more about the Summit Cone apartment fire. That was in May, right?
Yes, it was on May 12th, early in the morning. The fire broke out when Mugabo Emmanuel and his five children were asleep. He had his wife was away working an overnight shift at a poultry processing plant, and he was awoken by the sounds of coughing. He attempted to rescue the children, brought some of them out, and fire crews arrived on the scene within 5 minutes of receiving the call at around 3:54 in the morning. They were taken to hospitals and died from smoke inhalation shortly thereafter, three on Saturday and two on Sunday. Mm.
So he lost all five children. As you say, his wife was working at the time, and the fire department looked into it. They did an investigation into the cause. What did they say caused the fire?
The investigation itself took 3 months, an exhaustive research with interviews and analyzing all the equipment. The result was unattended cooking was given as the cause for the fire. Lots of dispute about that from within the complex itself. Some complaints aired about the oven itself potentially being defective, and that was ruled out essentially by the final report, although it did state that nothing can be with absolute certainty in those sorts of examinations.
Well, let's talk about some of the other concerns and other complaints that residents had with regard to that, with regard to the finding, but also the complex itself.
Right. Well, to begin with, the oven itself, initially when this the fire news broke and was looked into, shortly thereafter there was a public meeting within the complex where residents, neighbors of the Emmanuel family, stood up, also Democratic Republic of the Congo refugees, to point out that they had contacted the landlord to complain about an oven that would not shut off or an oven that would turn on its own at times. So that that was something that contradicted this notion of a cooking accident, if you will.
Yeah, and there were other things, too, that point to even broader issues that your series, I think, adeptly identified as you look into this fire. As you say, the fire department came up with a cause for the particular fire, but you spoke with First Baptist Church pastor in Greensboro, Alan Shiraus, about the fire. He was at the homegoing ceremony, essentially a funeral for the five children, and you talked to him about that investigation and the cause of the fire.
Part of my response has been to carefully consider all of the dynamics that led to this moment, because if we dismiss it only as an accident, that allows us to set it aside as though there's nothing we can do about it. And I feel that there are a lot of factors that lead to a tragedy like this that we need to consider carefully as a community.
That's a clip of Pastor Alan Shiraus from the First Baptist Church in Greensboro, featured in the series Unsafe Haven, produced by WFDD reporter and producer David Ford, who I'm talking with today. So talk more about these underlying causes, underlying considerations that Pastor Shiraus is talking about.
Sure. When you first arrive at the Summit Cone apartment complex, and I spent a good bit of time there and visiting with residents and the apartments themselves, you notice just the parking area behind the facility is, filled with broken glass and litter and just in complete chaos. Going into the apartments themselves, visiting with one resident my first day there, the week following the fire with Isaac Isaiah, Isaac pointed out immediately the kitchen area, and he was mentioning that they had found mice in the kitchen. Well, I've seen mice and I've seen rats, and in daylight there were rats within the kitchen area. There was a hole in the ceiling of the kitchen, a gaping hole, the bathroom itself was covered in black mold. There was a hand railing hanging by a screw and dangling on the staircase, and there were small children living there. So these are things that he had complained about for several weeks with the landlord, and they had not been acted on. There were several other – there were windows missing from first-level apartments with the person I met with the following day, Zawadi Grodi, and he had small children as well. The only thing separating their home from the outside world was a blanket that he had placed over the window. He had been complaining for over 8 weeks to have it replaced, and it had not been. So that sort of neglect came out early on in the coverage, and it was repeated again and again for the various apartments that I visited throughout the complex, a 42-unit complex.
And after the fire, the residents of Summit Cone petitioned to have all 42 units of that building inspected. What happened?
Yes, the petition was signed by five residents, among them Louis Mashengo. The code enforcement officers arrived there, spent several days inspecting all the units, and they discovered 466 code violations ranging from mild to major, including the rats I mentioned, plumbing issues with sewage backing up, et cetera. So it was immediately, or shortly thereafter, the building itself was condemned. And residents were given 30 days to leave and find new housing.
Yeah, and I understand this is the second time in 5 years that building was condemned. Is that right?
That's right. And that initially was very tough to understand how residents were moved in. And then within such a short period, it was again condemned. After the building was condemned 2 years ago, they were brought back up to minimum housing code standards. Beth Benton, the then chief enforcement officer, inspected all the units, and they were approved for habitation. But within that period, these are older buildings, they're built in the early 60s. Clearly, the wear and tear was not taken care of, and these issues began to crop up again. And this has been a pattern here with this organization of meeting code compliance, only to have it fall through again, and that was on clear display there.
Well, you mentioned one of the residents, Louis Mashengo, and here he is talking about the fact that he had to keep his windows open in the winter to let fresh air in because of the odor.
It was too hard to prepare food here because of bad smelling. We tried. Okay, sometimes you have to go and buy fresh air, but you are doing that, you are using your money for nothing. The money that maybe you could keep for other issue, but we have to do it for fresh air. Because of what? Because of the bad condition. And sometimes the worms was coming from the basement. Yeah, because this basement was full of the sewage.
That's a clip of Louis Mashengo, former resident of Summit Cone Apartment Complex, featured in the series Unsafe Haven, produced by WFDD reporter and producer David Ford. Let's talk about the company that owns this building. ARCO Realty manages Summit Cone Apartment Complex. What do we know about them?
Well, they manage Summit Cone. They also manage hundreds of other apartments and housing units throughout the city, begun by Bill Agapian back in the early 50s. A young real estate lawyer, retired from the military, and began the company then. He purchased the Summit Cone building in 63, and by as early as 1970, there are paper headlines that dealt with the renters' strike, dealing specifically with the Agapian family and ARCO Realty, the company that later became ARCO. He initially called it AAA Realty. And they have a long record, a track record of doing proactive, rather retroactive repairs following incidents rather than doing anything proactive along the lines of housing upkeep. And that that dates back several decades. Headlines in Greensboro have been going on kind of chronicling these various abuses over the years.
Well, you talked to a journalist, Eric Ginsburg, who reported on the Agapian family for the Triad City Beat several years ago, and here's what he had to say.
This is someone who does the minimal amount that they have to, and that they only make those minimal changes when they're caught by the city. And that has a huge cost for the rest of us.
That's journalist Eric Ginsberg talking about the Agapian family, who own hundreds of properties in Greensboro, in the Greensboro area. I'm talking to David Ford, a reporter and producer for WFDD in Winston-Salem, created the series exploring housing and refugee challenges in the Triad called Unsafe Haven. What happens when there are code violations? Why is this allowed to repeat itself? You say going back to the 70s, right?
Right. The code violations are pointed out by code enforcement officers in the city of Greensboro. Essentially, their role is to simply point out the violations with the hope of getting the landlord on track, making them aware of exactly what's wrong. They will fix those make those mandated repairs, and then the situation resolves itself that way. Given the number of units this family, the Agapian family, owns throughout the area, they've pointed to that as being a reason for not following up immediately or as quickly as they'd like, just trying to keep track of the many properties they have. But ultimately what happens is the violations are pointed out, the city does what they can to make the landlords accountable for those repairs that need to be made and make them. Then after that point, if they're not made by a certain point, the buildings can be condemned as a sort of first, last resort. That incentivizes them to begin making those repairs again. If they're not made within a certain window, then fines are levied. They can range up to $400 per month per unit for reinspection. So you're looking at a 42-unit complex there. Those fines can add up. Ultimately, those things are resolved at that point. In the very last case, as an ultimatum, the buildings are condemned and demolished, rather.
David, as your series points out, this problem is even deeper than one family and one property manager and one property owner in Greensboro. It goes much deeper, and we'll explore that when my conversation with David Ford, a producer and reporter at public radio station WFDD in Winston-Salem, continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, continuing our conversation about some of the community issues brought to light by a deadly fire at an apartment complex in Greensboro. The Summit Cone apartment fire in May killed five young children who were siblings and refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo. David Ford is a reporter and producer at public radio station WFDD. He created a series about some of the problems highlighted by the Summit Cone fire. The series itself is called Unsafe Haven. And one of the things that, as you drill down into the story that you discovered, David, is that this is deeply connected to the lack of affordable housing in the Greensboro and throughout the Triad, really. Talk more about this.
That's right. That's certainly an issue throughout the Triad, and it is a big issue, and it's on the minds of folks throughout city government and certainly within the resettlement agency world and the residents themselves. It's this the idea of an apartment, a three-bedroom apartment for $800 or less, is becoming less and less. There are just very few options out there. Speaking with Greensboro Housing Coalition Director Brett Byerly on that topic, he points to just the dearth of affordable housing. Ultimately, that's at the root of the issue. Lots of things going into even the cause of the dearth of affordable housing, but apartment rents have been rising throughout this region. And it's a concern for the resettlement agencies tasked with placing these refugees in safe and affordable settings. Finding those for that kind of money for large families is just becoming a real challenge. And thankfully, things are underway to hopefully reverse that trend.
Yeah, but they're not there yet. As you say, Brett Byerly from the Greensboro Housing Coalition talked about just how difficult it is to place those folks.
We're saying to people, we will give your landlord $1,500 for your first month's rent and your security deposit if you can just find a place to move into, and they're not coming back to us because they can't find a place to move into. That really tells you a good piece of the story. There's money sitting on the table that they're not able to use because the affordable housing stock is just not there.
Brett Byerly from the Greensboro Housing Coalition, featured in the series Unsafe Haven, produced by WFDD reporter and producer David Ford. So that's part of the problem, and that affects everybody in the Triad, everybody in a region where there's a lack of affordable housing. Now let's focus on the refugee community in the Triad. Walk us through how they're introduced to the region and what they're doing.
Typically, what happens when these refugees arrive from the DRC, they're met at the airport by a representative from a resettlement agency or a nonprofit organization set up with providing them initial housing. getting them plugged in with some basic benefits, education system, healthcare, et cetera, and providing them with food initially when they arrive. Once they're there, many of the refugees at Summit Cone began work with poultry processing plants in surrounding counties, often very far from home, but very kind of minimum wage, low-paying jobs, but jobs that allow for a lack of language skills, for example, or skills that would be needed for other work to get them on the ground running and making an income. So that's kind of the first introduction, if you will, to the area when they arrive in the Piedmont, typically Piedmont Triad Airport.
And again, this is we're talking about refugees and not other immigrants. We're talking about refugees who are here legally and with some U.S. government support for a few months. And most or all are working, sometimes both family members, both adults in the family working, not able to afford the rents in the area. So that just sort of highlights what's going on, because these people are performing jobs that apparently are going unmet, or at least jobs that would be otherwise, the wages for those prices would have to go up a lot if Americans who are living here now may take them. So it's a very complicated story. And let's bring us back to the fire. You attended the homegoing service, essentially a funeral for the five children who died at the Summit Cone apartment fire. Tell us what that was like.
It was a very gray, overcast day when I arrived, fitting for the occasion. Many visitors and mourners from the continent of Africa arrived to show their support for the family, dressed in very colorful native garb in many cases. The huge church at the Mount Zion Baptist Church there in Greensboro, very modern. Inside, several jumbo screens, showing the service itself, a choir on stage, and at the front of the stage, five tiny white coffins. And while the homegoing service is intended to be the celebration of life of the children and they're going to heaven, it was a really very stark reminder just the horrible loss for this family and the community, and yet music rang out and people sang and it was an experience I won't forget.
David, thank you for looking into this story and not just leaving it as a fire story. Thanks so much for doing the work.
Thank you, Frank.
David Ford, a producer and reporter at public radio station WFDD in Winston-Salem. You can find a link to his series, Unsafe Haven, at our website, stateofthings.org.